I don't know about you, but I must confess, 2 Samuel is not a book I visit a whole lot in my devotional reading of Scripture. So in case I'm not the only one here, I wanted to give you a little bit of background, you know, if you haven't been diving into that book as of late. In the first six chapters, so the chapters leading up to this, David has been anointed king of Israel. He's consolidated his political power. He's built himself a royal palace, that reference he made to the cedar. He's produced a lot of children by a lot of women. He is engaged in bloody and victorious battles. And he has brought the Ark of the Lord to Jerusalem in that crazy naked dance that he did that people love to talk about from 2 Samuel. And so this Ark of the Lord was understood to be the manifestation of God's presence in Jerusalem. And all of this has happened, and now, finally, David has had a moment to rest and reflect, and that is where our text begins today. David sort of sits back and takes a look at his digs and thinks, gosh, God is living in a tent. My house is awesome. My house is better than God's house, and I should probably do something about that. And as a newly minted king over Israel with a newly established capital, entering a potential time finally of stability, even if only temporary, temple construction actually would have made a lot of sense as a next project for him. It would have been logical to help solidify his kingdom and his authority. But God had something to say about that. Through the prophet Nathan, God says to David, You want to build a house for me. That's cute. Let me tell you a little bit about your kingdom and your authority. Okay, God didn't exactly say those words, but that's sort of the gist of what God is getting at. God says, in my time with you, with all the leaders before you, have I ever asked for a house? Have I ever requested this? No. I have been moving among my people all along. And this is the first noticeable part of this week's covenant that we stop at. That phrase, to move about, that God uses, literally means to walk back and forth. So God is sort of this pacing God, walking back and forth among the people. That's the kind of God that we are dealing with, the kind of God we hear throughout Scripture, one that refuses to sit still, one that refuses even to sit on a throne and watch from afar, one that will not be contained or told where to abide, but one who chooses to show up freely, maybe even unexpectedly, in and among the people. A God that will not be forced into a box or a boundary of our own design, because God is more expansive, more mysterious, more widely accessible, more creative than we can even fathom. Which means that if we are looking for God's presence, then we may very well find it in this place, and I hope that we do, but we can't find the fullness of God just in this place. God is walking back and forth among the people, even now. God's presence is found all over the world in unexpected places, available to everybody, and especially to those who need it most. As God told David, throughout all the struggles, throughout all of his trials, throughout all that had happened, God says, I was with you wherever you went. And this has not changed for us, friends. God does not wait for us to get ourselves to God. God does not wait for us to choose to come to God. God always comes to be with us, to walk back and forth among us. And God's second sentiment to David kind of follows along this thread. David attempts wonderfully to offer something up to God, but God is the one who has done, is doing, and will do these safeguarding, nourishing, life-giving things. God lays out a nice laundry list of ways that God has been, or that David has been remembered and cared for and sustained along the way. David will not build a house for God, as the story will go on to show. He will never get to that because, as one of my favorite seminary professors always said, God is the subject of the verbs. God is the one who does the work. God is the doer in this story. God is the one who makes things happen. God should be the subject of most of our verbs. This dialogue between David and God through the prophet Nathan is a reminder of who is in which place. God says, I'll be God. You be David. I'll be God and you be Israel. I'll be God and you be my people, not the other way around. How often do we assume that we know what's best for the world? We know what's best for God's people. Heck, we even know what's best for God. And sometimes we tell God that. But even in our best intentions and our best laid plans, sometimes what we think is true is not what God has in mind. The words spoken to David remind us that our place is to ask God for guidance, to listen to the answer, and to follow wherever God's presence leads us, not to run ahead with our own plans and then kind of check back behind us to see if God is following. God's kingdom and God's authority over that kingdom are stronger, more secure, and healthier than anything that David could have conjured up or built for himself. In fact, the biggest hope that a king, a settled king, could have had would have been a long-lasting kingdom of peace, an abundant life, salvation from anything that might harm. And that is exactly what God was up to. That is the crux of this covenant. David wants to build a house for God, and with a nice play and twist on words, God says, I will build a house for you. And some house it is. It doesn't have four walls or a door or a window, but somehow it is much broader and much more secure than any house David could have built. God's covenant promises David that his people who have wandered and hurt for so long in history will now be held and protected and kept for generations to come. That even though they will stumble and fall, God will love and uphold them unconditionally. And this covenant marks for Israel the promise, the first time that they really have hope and understanding of a coming Messiah. And we as Christians who have been sort of grafted into this story, into God's family tree alongside the Israelites, this covenant was for them, but now we have come to see this covenant fulfilled in an even deeper way. See, the promise of a house wasn't a house. It was a dynasty. It was a people. Even more, it was a lineage. A lineage that we understand led specifically to Jesus. The gospel writers lay it out very quickly and very clearly. Matthew's gospel begins with a lineage of Jesus, and it particularly draws out David's name in that line. Luke has Mary, Elizabeth, Zechariah singing songs of how God has kept promises and specifically reminds us that Jesus' family was of the house of David, which is why they were traveling for the census anyway that we hear in the Christmas story. We see that even though the Davidic kings, namesake included, seem to have suffered whole episodes of amnesia about who God was and what God was doing among them, God kept covenant. They stumbled, they fell, they suffered natural consequences for their actions, but God held covenant. God sustained them. And this family that we have been invited into, this house, this people, is forever. That means that when we too fail to live up to our ancestor Jesus, when we fail to live up to the house rules or the family expectations, we are loved unconditionally. There's nothing we can do that will kick us out of the family. God keeps covenant to love us, sustain us, and to walk back and forth among us. God promises, just like in David's kingdom, to give us peace, to give us abundant life. Maybe that looks different than what we imagined for ourselves and for the world, but nevertheless. And God promises through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus to give us, too, salvation from all that would harm us, including maybe even ourselves. Because the covenant was not just for David. It was given for the sake of the people, Israel, who needed peace and hope. Did you hear how many times they were listed in the story? My people Israel, over Israel, I am for Israel. God could not have been more clear. This is a people that needed just a minute to breathe, just to be, to rest from the troubles of their lives and their history. And it was given to them to help them to see beyond themselves and beyond their fears toward a life, a future with God. And this promise extends to us through that lineage, through Jesus, our Messiah, who bids us in the gospel, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden with the weight of the world, the weight of your own sin, come and rest. Come and see beyond yourselves, beyond your fears, toward a life and a future with God. Certainly, we can offer God our very best, and we should. But we always remember it is God who comes to us. God who stoops down to meet us right where we are and promises us that our brokenness is not the end of our story. God continues to carry us on into new life. For we are God's people. We are God's house. Thanks be to God.